The International Mastermind Association is a group of like-minded individuals who have come together based on the mastermind concept espoused in Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. As masterminders, we commit to coming together as a group on a regular basis for a coordination of knowledge and effort in a spirit of harmony between two or more people for the attainment of a definite purpose. We come together to share knowledge with one another, support each other in setting and achieving our goals, and hold one another accountable to what we commit to do for ourselves. We set goals in 10 areas of our lives: spiritual, family, health, financial, business, civic, personal, educational, recreational, creativity. You must have goals and plans if you are going to succeed in any endeavor. After all, successful people have plans. Napoleon Hill said, quote, education, knowledge, and influence are more powerful than any exchange of money, end quote. For more information about International Mastermind Association, visit us on the web, internationalmasterminders.com, or once again, Facebook the group, International Mastermind Association.
And good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Ann McNeil, the Master Builder, helping to build stronger and better lives. And I am so excited today about our show from the chapter entitled Specialized Knowledge from the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. But before we get to the chapter, I would like to introduce our co-host because we have some special guests that have become co-host for this awesome show. And so if you are listening in for the very first time, second, third, or fourth, put on your seatbelt and get ready for the ride. We have today joining us none other than Miss Bakeen and Mr. Wyman Wimbush. And I only call Bakeen's first name because her last name is Echeverra. And she says, just call me Bakeen. Also, we have always returning with us, Ms. Ursula Odom. So right now, I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, first Ms. Bakeen and then Wyman, then Ursula, and we will give you our aha moment on this specialized knowledge chapter, as Napoleon Hill tells us that specialized knowledge basically is our personal experiences or observations. He calls it the fourth step to riches. But before we get too deep into that explanation, I want to introduce Bakeen. Good morning, Bakeen.
Good morning, everybody. I am so excited to be here. You know, this is one of my favorite chapters. And if I can share my aha moment with this, that is the part that says to transmute desire into its monetary equivalent, you will require specialized knowledge of the service, merchandise, or profession you intend to offer in return for fortune. And I can see and know that my path really wanted me to know my specialized knowledge and understand how to package it. Because all I ever wanted to do was understand how women and minorities and people in the military can move up or down in rank within business and success and organizations, and how those organizations can help and hinder. So, and then how can I solve that problem? And that led me to going for my master's in social work, although I never knew why I did that. Now I know it was because I had this desire and I needed that insight in organizational development and the insight in how people think so then I can serve my clients in such a way that they understand I've got the message, I've got the pathway, and I have the tools. And that made a huge difference. But I had no idea before I read this book that I had to gain specialized knowledge and understand how to offer it in return for the fortune. So that's my aha from that part.
Thank you. And now we'll go to Wyman and then to Ursula. And while we're, morning,
good
Wyman.
Morning,
welcome.
How are you?
To
can you hear me?
I'm awesome. Yeah. Yeah, of course. I can hear you. Just want to welcome you as a host to the show. Have you share your aha moment from the specialized knowledge chapter. Then we'll go to Ursula, and then we will give a recap on what we've covered so far.
Yes. You know, and what part of my background is in sales. I've been with IBM in sales for over 30 years now. And one of the things when it comes to marketing, whether the product is a piece of software or something that you do as a consultant, no one pays a premium for a generalist. If you're taking notes, that might be one worth writing down. No one pays a premium for a generalist. If we want to maximize the value we bring to the marketplace, we must specialize. If you think of a physician, there's a general practitioner, and then there's a neurosurgeon. And I don't have to tell you which one gets the most, brings the most value to the marketplace. So that's my aha moment, is if we want to maximize the value we bring to the marketplace or even to our families, we need to become a specialist in a particular area that's in demand. That's my aha moment.
All right. Now, Ms. Ursula, thank you.
Good morning. This is an interesting area for me because I've always felt like I've been kind of jack of all trades. But I realized just recently, a couple of years ago, that those things that I was learning were coming together under one umbrella, and that is to capture, preserve, and present legacy information by any means necessary, any form possible. And when I was looking at the chapter on page 83, it jumped out at me that says, there is one weakness in people for which there is no remedy, and that is the universal weakness of lack of ambition. And I realize that's never been my problem because, quite frankly, I will take any situation that is presented to me to try to learn something about it. I'll volunteer. I'll hold my hand up to try anything new. And the first time that came about was when I learned how to macrame. I just wanted to prove I could do it. And that was simply a sideline thing. But specialized knowledge comes into play for me in that now they're all lining up because people are beginning to realize that it has a purpose. The things that I have been learning from computers to history to talking to people, interviewing people. Now I produce something that is well sought after. As it turns out, they now know that it is there's been a master plan to it. So I'm loving this chapter.
Thank you. You know, Nito Cobain says something about intentional congruence, and he suggests where we take everything that we do and it ties to the ultimate goal. And I think that that is an explanation for me for taking the knowledge we have. The book shares that knowledge will not attract money or any other kind of or anything else unless it is organized and intelligently directed through practical plans of action to the definite end of accumulating money. Now, what happens is that our lack of understanding of this fact has led many of us to become, I call, wandering generalities. And so when you think about your specialized knowledge in your craft, how much money do you expect to make based upon what you've chosen to do in your life calling? Are you a generalist? Or are you a specialist? I decided many years ago to go into the construction industry. And after getting my general contractor's license and doing construction for many years, I realized it really was not making or having the level of success, and the book calls it vast wealth, if you will, until I began to understand that even in the construction industry, we specialize in industries. For example, an industry specialized, could be aviation, could be transportation, it could be water, could be healthcare. And I began to follow the leaders in that industry and do what they do. And then I began to realize, wait a minute, if I choose an industry, everybody in that industry, they are contractors, they're architects, they're engineers, but they only focus in that industry. Healthcare architects, engineers, and contractors don't necessarily do schools. They don't necessarily do highway. They only niche to be rich in their own industry. And so what we're going to discuss today on this show is your specialized knowledge. See, just because we have a vast amount of knowledge or information in these degrees that we acquire, it does not relate really to transmuting that into money. So right now we're going to go to a summary of all of the chapters we've discussed so far. And this summary is a phenomenal recap, if you will. Then we will go to a commercial, and the next voice you hear is our special guest, Mr. Norm Ho, who is going to share his aha moments and his experiences with this specialized knowledge chapter. So hold on.
Number one is desire. Napoleon Hill says that everything starts with a burning desire, a compelling reason for doing what it is we do. Step two is faith, having belief in our ability to attain that which we desire. Step three is what he calls auto-suggestion. Auto-suggestion simply means being very intentional about the things that we are pouring into our thoughts, into our brains, and into our consciousness. Our brains, our minds will receive everything automatically, but we have to work extra hard to make sure that the positive things are what we are feeding ourselves, because that positive thoughts are going to turn into positive actions. Step number four is specialized knowledge. No one person knows everything, even about whatever their particular area of expertise might be. And the value of the mastermind principle is using the specialized knowledge of other people, imagination, the workshop of the mind. Everything starts with our imagination and our thoughts, the burning desire to transform those thoughts into our reality. In order to do that, we have to look at step six, which is organized planning. That is how we crystallize our desire into action, organizing ourselves. Having the thought and not acting on the thought isn't going to get us anywhere. We have the thought. We go through the organized planning to transform that thought into action. Step number seven is decision, which Napoleon Hill says is the mastery of procrastination. Napoleon Hill says that the antidote to procrastination is simply to make a decision and then move on that decision. Step eight is persistence. We have to have a sustained effort, which is induced by our faith, in order to achieve our goals. One of Napoleon Hill's books, I love even the title, 3 Feet from Gold, that those people who became rich during the gold rush in the Wild Wild West days didn't do that because they were necessarily smarter, had better information than anybody else. It's because they stayed just a little bit longer. Sometimes people left when they were just literally 3 feet from gold. So hanging in there, being persistent, is step number eight. Step number nine, the power of the mastermind, the driving force. None of us can accomplish anything on our own. Everybody, I don't care who you are, from the most prominent person to the person who might be considered the lowest on the totem pole, everybody had somebody who helped them to get to where they are. And the power of the mastermind is being able to use those influences around us, use the thought, use the knowledge, use the inspiration of other people to help us in achieving our goals. Step number 10, The Mystery of Sex Transmutation. This title can be a little confusing, but essentially what The Mystery of Sex Transmutation means is that we oftentimes in our society think of sex as being purely physical. It is absolutely physical. But what Napoleon Hill teaches us is that sex also has an emotional element, and that sex is the strongest of our desires. That if we can take our sexual energy, transform that into positive, creative influences, it can propel us to new heights. And so we spent quite a bit of time talking about the mystery of sex, of step 10, which is sex transmutation. 11 is the subconscious mind, which Napoleon Hill tells us is the connecting link between our human mind and the infinite intelligence, the source of all thought, the source of all creativity. Conscious mind, we spent some time talking about how we use that through the influence of auto-suggestion and what we're feeding into our minds. Today, again, we're talking about step number 12.
You're listening to the Blog Talk Radio program of the International Mastermind Association. We are here every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. You can listen to this and the other shows anytime on the web by visiting blogtalkradio.com/masterminders, or join us live during the show by calling 661-554-9219. The call-in number again, 661-554-9219. If you wish to join the conversation during the live show, just press 1 on your telephone keypad. You can also join us in the chat room or log on through your Facebook account.
And we are back. We are back with our special guest, Mr. Norm Hull. Now, I actually met Norm as a part of the National Speakers Association, and a very quiet, very unassuming, but very experienced and powerful man in his specialized knowledge in his craft in this industry. Norm Hull is a CSP, which if you're part of the National Speakers Association as a certified speaker, he is the principal owner of Norm Hull and Associate, which is a leadership consulting company based in Southern California. So we want to tip our hat to Norm this morning for being willing to be up and on this show at 5 o'clock in the morning, 8 a.m. his time. Good morning, Norm. How are you this morning?
Good morning. Thanks for providing the opportunity to see the sunrise.
Of course. We want to make sure that everybody know, Norm, that you are an acclaimed speaker, leadership expert, and best-selling author, and that you have also spoken to many audiences, actually all over the United States and probably internationally. We'll talk about that. And yeah. So if you would like to please share a little about yourself, and then we'd like to have a dialogue about your aha moment, if you will, from this great chapter on specialized knowledge in the book, Think and Grow Rich.
Of course. And thanks for the invitation to be here and to share my bit of knowledge or my interpretation of this great book. What I will tell you is that as I have read the book, and this is my third or fourth time, it is just amazing what it reveals to me. And as I apply it to where I've been in my life, it's like, wow, these are all things I've been doing, but unconsciously. And so one of the things I will tell you is in my past, is that I found a lot of the concepts to be applicable, and they probably would have been more impactful if I had the knowledge about what I was learning and how I was using it. And so I know for me, this particular chapter is my favorite, at least today it is, because of the value of specialized knowledge. I spent way too much time recognizing or searching for my specialized knowledge. I saw it in other people, but it was real hard to see it in myself because I didn't consider it valuable. I thought it was just something I did. And, you know, a lot of times we're going to find people who will tell us, oh, you're good at that, and we'll discount it or not hear what they're saying. And so the reason why I like this chapter at this stage of my life is when it validates what I do know about myself. Second thing I like is that, you know, to take your knowledge and to monetize it is a challenge for a lot of people, or it's an aspect of self-discovery that they really don't spend time on. So I can't tell you, and probably like those of you listening, how many times have you gone to YouTube and typed in the question you had or the problem you had, hoping that there was a video out there that showed you how to solve it. And I will tell you from my, perspective, 99% of the time when I type in that question, that query, there is a video that somebody has taken time to create to explain me how to put the air filter in the refrigerator or to install this type of software onto my computer, and there is no charge for it. It's specialized knowledge, but there is no charge for the time and energy they took to make the video. And I hope YouTube doesn't do that, but man, that's a great example of not taking your knowledge and monetizing it. And so I know for me, to monetize my knowledge was one of the things that was very hard to do outside the realm of paying me to give a speech. I have definitely other knowledge that's valuable. And so I love this chapter because it teaches me to always make sure that I don't take my gifts for granted. The other part is, and I think Ursula said it earlier, is she pursues knowledge. And I think all of us on this call do. But I know that when I go to an event, I'm paying attention and I'm learning not just from sitting in the audience, but from the people putting it on, so that later on, if I choose to do something similar, I'm always going to be adding to what I know, not just from the perspective of the participant. So once I learn something, what I do is look for the next level of learning in that same industry. So those are the three ahas that jumped out at me. And as I mentioned, I love this chapter because it talks about how each one of us, if we spend enough time figuring out what our knowledge is, we can make a life that we enjoy and want and dream. And so I think that's the biggest challenge when you're younger, is to figure out what that knowledge is. So those were my three ahas I loved from this chapter that just jumped out at me.
Well, I know you said when we're young, but I think that the older we get, the more we know we don't know. I'll just speak for myself.
I will support that thought.
I'll speak for myself. Now, we're going to have Wyman to come on, and he has, of course, as you know, from the fact that we're all in the Black NSA Mastermind group and we're walking through this book. So we've had an opportunity to get to know each other a little. And as a result of that, I've been, you know, asked Wyman if he would join us as one of the hosts on this show, because right now we are experiencing a phenomenal growth spurt, if you will, through walking through this book. So, Wyman, you're on.
Yes. Hey, good morning, Norm. Thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
Yes, you know, I think in many ways you answered one of the questions I had, which was, what stands out for you in this particular chapter? So I'd like to rephrase the question. If you were speaking to someone, what would be your strongest argument for them to not only read but master the focus and topic of this chapter about specialization?
Well, I think that I would tell them the mindset they have is one that puts them in the position of being the owner of their life or the renter of their life. And what I mean by that is, are they borrowing, are they letting someone else determine where they go, what they have, the good things they have in their lives, where they're going to live? Because one of the things about this particular book that I enjoy is ultimately it says, look, whatever life you want, you can have if you follow my steps. And a lot of people I run into or used to run into, because I try to avoid hanging out in people's or in groups where people are letting other people have influence, probably a larger level of influence than I think they should, on the type of life they lead. So if someone were to ask me, I'd say, hey, first thing you want to do is when you look at this book and read this book, I want you to think about each chapter from the perspective of you're in charge of your life, and that no matter what happens to it, you get to decide how you're going to react. Whatever successes you have, you get to decide how you're going to build on it, and you're not going to be happy that somebody promoted you or gave you a raise, because ultimately they're still in control of your livelihood. And so when you look at this book, look at it through the eyes of, I want to be in control of my own destiny. I want my family to live where I want it to live. I want us to have the things that we want and not have that based on the actions of somebody else. And for a lot of people, I think that's very hard because they grow up in the arena of trying to get a good job. And if you've read the book, then you realize there are so many people who, when they get out of college, they're looking to be employed by somebody else, and they're at the mercy of what they choose to pay them at where they start them in their professional career. But if you're taking the lessons to heart, excuse me, where, and there's a great example where the mom prepared the packet for her son so that when he went to apply for a job, he had all the tools to say that I don't need to start at the bottom. I don't deserve to start at the bottom, and I won't start at the bottom. I have skills that will position me to start at this level in your company, and I expect to be paid accordingly. And that mom, not the son, the mom had the mindset of, I am not going to let others determine the success of my child. So that's the first thing I try to get across when I talk to people about this book and about leadership. That's my main area, is that don't be a renter in your own life. Be the owner. And that right there is the biggest step for a lot of people to take.
And Norm, could you thank you for that. Could you tie that specifically to specialized knowledge? What role does specialized knowledge have in that conversation about being the owner, not the renter?
Sure. I think the first thing you would, I'm assuming they're reading the book. The first thing I think you have to recognize is that you have specialized knowledge. The question is, what is it? A lot of times when you're younger and growing up, you hear people say, oh, you've got the potential. And everyone always wished someone would say the potential to do what? To rob banks, to solve cancer. They want direction. What they know is that they have some type of gift, and the biggest challenge in the beginning is trying to figure out what that gift is. And that gift is your knowledge. And you'd have to take the time to sit down, and this is where I think a lot of energy should be spent, is take the time, sit down, figure it out, list what you do well, list what gets you up in the morning, list something that you know that others don't know, but they seem to marvel at it. When I was younger, I used to hang out at a local pub by a college where I live, and they would have trivia night on Tuesday. And me and my little group of friends, we'd go, and they'd give away a beers if you could answer the question. Well, I can't tell you how many times I answered the questions. I didn't need the beer. After one or two, you're done. But I just loved the fact that I could answer them. And in the beginning of my life, knowing and having that knowledge didn't serve me well. It served me well that night because I could get beers from my friends. But to understand how to apply that is a challenge. And so I think when we're looking through this book, trying to figure out what specialized knowledge is, it means we have to be willing to look at ourselves and go, what do I spend a lot of my time and energy on? Right now on Jeopardy, there is a guy who is killing it because he is taking his specialized knowledge and he has found a place where it's valuable, which is the game of Jeopardy, because you need to know a lot of stuff about a lot of different things. But it's one of the few places where general knowledge gets you into the room, but it's going to be specialized knowledge that gets you the dollars. And so for those people who are trying to have that owner mindset, they have to understand that when they walk into their business where they're working, Look at who's in charge. What does he or she know that you don't know? When you take your son or daughter to a particular sporting event and there's a coach out there, and this may be a coach who you're paying extra to teach your son or daughter some better skills in batting or soccer, what does he or she know and how did they know it? And there are examples all around us where people have taken their specialized knowledge and turned it into their personal business. And you have to have a different set of eyes. And sometimes that's the first thing you need to get people to do, is to open their eyes or to change the frame on their lenses that they're looking through, so that they now say, people in my circle, who owns their business or who has that mindset? I hope that answers the question. It probably took too long to get there, but I think it's so valuable to spend time about that step, because that's usually one of the most challenging to get through, and to get through it is important so you can get to the other parts of the book and understand it from that perspective.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you, Norm.
So great. That was so great. This is Pagin. I have to, you know, I love that you've read the book two or three or four times, and I think that this is the kind of book I've read it like tons of times.
Yeah.
But when you're rereading a book over and over, you find depth that you never knew was there before.
Mm-hmm.
What great piece of knowledge is easy to miss in this chapter? What, when you've read it the second, third, fourth time, what jumps out to you like, wow, I never saw that before? This means
mm-hmm.
a lot to me.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Well, I think I mentioned it earlier because, you know, it could be because it's relevant because of the local news or the current news about the parents who were trying to get their students, their kids into college and you know, did everything they could, paying coaches and different people to take tests. Ultimately, it's not the behavior I recommend or support, but they wanted to give their child, I hate to say a head start, they wanted them to start in a place that they thought would help them be successful. And they did it without telling their child, which on one hand protects their child from knowing what took place, but gives them a false sense of confidence and accomplishment. But ultimately, they wanted their child to have the best opportunity to go on and be successful. Now, how they chose to do it, I can't support. But that right there goes back to the, and I mentioned it earlier, it goes back to the lady in the story who created this packet for their son so he would start in a different place when it came time to find a job. Every year, there are college students who go in and sit with their recruiter, and they sit with the mindset of, please pick me, please pick me. I want to start with your company, and yeah, you're going to put me at the bottom of the ladder, and I'm going to be happy about that. Well, if it was my child doing that, I would say, wait a second, let me follow what this lady did. Create the packet, showcase your specialized knowledge. And I would probably bet that the fact that my daughter did that and came with a packet that said, here's not what I've just learned, but here's how it applies, here's what's taking place in my life, and because of this specialized knowledge, this is what differentiates me from all the other people you're talking to. And I see myself starting here in your company, which
right.
is not the starting place they're offering. But, I mean, that would have the recruiter going, wait a second, this is a go-getter. And you can do that not just in the, you know, coming out of college. You can do that when you go to apply to work for somebody else. You can create
Absolutely.
Your position. So I think there are lots of lessons from that particular story. And my hope is that the son later on would have done that for his child. Because as much as the effort is admirable by the mom, the hope is that you pass on that lesson to your child so that they can pass it on and implement it. So I think that's one of the most important kernels in that chapter that gets missed, because it doesn't seem like a big deal. But in today's world, you'll look at superstars and people who have a high profile, and if you were to deconstruct how they got there, they will tell you there were moments where they said, I'm not going to behave like other people. I'm going to go down this path and take what I know about me, my specialized knowledge, and pack it package isn't a great package that you can't resist. So that's the piece that keeps jumping out every time I read it now that I see it.
I had to say something, which you just said, and you reminded me of something so that I completely forgot about. When my daughter was in eighth grade, she knew she wanted to go to a really good school, and she knew that we had whispered in her ear they were going to college, but we weren't going to pay for it. And so they had to figure out how to do that. And she wrote to the Naval Academy, what would I need to take in high school to be get in the academy? She had no intention of going to the academy. She just knew that they took the best of the best. And what they sent her was this plan that she kept on her refrigerator, on our refrigerator, and she followed it all. She did everything on that plan. At graduation, she had won $350,000 worth of scholarships at full rides at seven of the top colleges. But I forgot about it until just now, as you were talking, that was specialized information, knowledge that was given to her. And for those listening, every big school can send you what do you need to get in so that you started eighth grade to plan. And so thank you so much for sharing that. That you know, just a reminder for everybody, yes, you need the specialized knowledge and you need to apply it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're willing to give it to you. They're willing to share it with you. You know, if you were to ask, hey, how many people have asked for this? I bet you the response would have you sitting there going, what? Because it's probably very, very low. And as I mentioned earlier, that's the difference between being a renter and an owner. You know, that mindset. And kudos to your daughter.
Yeah, my son didn't follow that way, so just so you know.
All right. At this point, we're going to take a moment and just inhale because I am sitting here typing. Your aha moments are phenomenal. We're going to go to Ursula because this is awesome.
Okay. I was just all over the place, quite frankly, and just as Pagin said, it reminded me of a number of things, but what I really liked was when you said general gets you into the room, and that reminds me of the fact that when I traveled to London and was able to reflect on that, it caused people to go, oh, it got their attention because this little country girl that grew up in the backwoods of Georgia was able to speak about something they never thought that I would be able to. And so my question for you is, how are you adding to your specialized knowledge in the area that you are currently working and that you're interested in and gaining more insight? How do you grow?
Well, you know, one of the things that has worked for me later on in life is that I realized that gaining knowledge means it gives me more opportunities to consider. And so when I go to a live event over the last couple of years, I used to attend as a participant. So I would go, pay my registration, sit there, and get the knowledge from the person who was presenting. Well, now, every time I go someplace, I'm looking at the way things are set up. I'm looking at the way things are outlined agenda-wise. So my eyes have changed. I'm looking at it from the perspective, if I want to do this, what do I need to know? And what's going on that other people aren't noticing? And what's my experience like? So I've really changed the way I perceive wherever I go as a place of what's the knowledge I want to get out of this event. So I just came back from a conference on Video Lab that NSA put on. And so I attended like everybody else as a person who was interested in seeing how I can increase the use of video in my business. Well, while I was going through that process of learning about that, I also paid attention to the hotel that was used, the food that wasn't served or was served, the flow of the day, the seating of the room, the use of the AV. And so I've just trained myself now to say yes to attending things and going places with the mindset of what is it I want to learn from spending my time and energy here. And I don't necessarily have to buy a book to gain knowledge. I just have to pay attention. And I usually try to say, what are three things that I can take from this event? What are three things I can take from this book beforehand, not while I'm in the process of absorbing it? And so, if we can have those set of eyes on when we go out, we will find that we can always accumulate knowledge. What do I notice about this car that I'm using or Ubering in? Because, renting cars doesn't seem like a big deal until you go to buy a car and you think about your past rental experiences and what you liked about the car and what you didn't like about the car. Mm-hmm. But if you're not paying attention, it was just a car you rented. And so you've missed an opportunity to gain some research information from a simple thing as renting a car. So, for me, I am always looking at where I'm at and paying attention. That's the long answer to your question, but learning it.
It's interesting because you remind me of when I'm in a meeting as well, I will fold my paper in sections, and part of it is to take the notes. Another part is to write down, it's labeled to do. And then there's one just ideas. But if I don't have anything out of that meeting that I'm supposed to do based on what I've learned, then I've mm-hmm. not learned anything practical, because I'm not walking away with anything I can actually go do. And that includes looking up a website. That's a to-do item. If they have interest me enough to look up a website or to search for something, then that serves as one of those things. So mm-hmm. I totally agree with what you're saying. But I also realized
I was going to say another perspective too, because sometimes, because I do the same thing. I put a little column on the right, action things. I can write down, don't do this. It's like, ooh, never do this. So I just wanted to throw that in there for those making that type of list.
Oh, that's a good one. And I also think Wyman has some additional questions for you as well.
Sure.
Yeah, Norm, this is in a moment of transparency here, right? I struggle with this scenario as a self-professed polymath, someone who's done everything from flown airplanes to preach a couple sermons this past week, sales, a polymath. You're good at a lot of things, but that does not help me get to specialized knowledge. And it's like when you're hungry, you want to go to a restaurant that cooks everything from Chinese to sushi to Italian, or do you want to go to a restaurant that specializes in what you have a taste for on that night, right? And so can you share, for me, in a moment of transparency, when people ask you, Wyman, what do you do? I can't say I do everything. Mm-hmm. I need to decide a major and make it poignant and articulate how it brings value to that person. Can you share a moment related to that of when you wish you had specialized knowledge, or specialized knowledge would have been helpful in assisting you accomplish your goal, right? Could, a moment back in time, looking back, when you said, man, I wish I would have been more specialized at that time.
Mm-hmm. Sure. The power of hindsight is one of the things is underrated these days, I think. Years ago, my wife and I decided to have a bucket list adventure, and that was we decided to open a restaurant. And the town we live in, there was no fine dining restaurant. So we decided that was going to be one of the bucket list items we were going to do. We'd watched a couple of shows on TV, and I think it was about the time where Rocco DiSpirito had had a show called The Restaurant, and watching it, you could see that he just could not run it. He was a great chef, but I'm like, oh my God, this is so easy, because I come from a leadership background. So watching somebody who couldn't manage people just drove me crazy, and I'm thinking, oh, this is not that hard. And of course, you know, it's TV and edited, and it was designed to make it look as dysfunctional as it was, and it probably was, but they just captured it. So we chose to open a restaurant, a fine dining restaurant, and we spent probably about 2 years doing the design, talking about the food, and we had it built from the ground up. And the wonderful thing about this fine dining restaurant was it opened in January of 2007, and for 6 months, it was wonderful. The place was packed. There was no advertising. We did no sign out on the front of the restaurant. You had to find it. It was like finding the hole in the wall game. Once you figured out how to get into the restaurant, you didn't want to tell anybody else, because you could sit and watch others struggle to find their way in. And, of course, they'd come in and go, you need to put a sign out there. And we would say, sit and watch. And they would watch the other people try to struggle. And once they get in, and they would join this group of people who now knew the secret way. And of course they would say, no, don't put a sign up. It's better for us just to watch this. Well, 6 months into this wonderful process, the recession hit. You know, in the town we live in, a lot of the industry is based on home buying and in real estate. And so we were definitely impacted. 6 months later, there was no way I wanted to continue, and neither did my wife or my brother, who was a partner in this, because it just didn't make sense. The specialized knowledge I wish I would have had back then was to go and talk to a forecaster who would say, here's what we see coming. Because I think they would have said, I see a hiccup, or they see a hiccup coming in the economy 8 months from now. Well, 8 months after opening January would have been August, September, right about the time it hit. And so it would have given us an opportunity to decide, ooh, we better prepare for this, or we may want to cut our losses now. But knowing to ask was probably a shortcoming on my part. Because we were so excited about the restaurant and it was doing really well. But the benefit of specialized knowledge, not just within yourself, but looking around and taking advantage of it, is something I think should be included in any adventure you're going to do. Is, I know this much in this particular area, but what are the other areas that we need to pay attention to? And so in that setting, that was a financial area where I probably could have used more knowledge. Actually, I know I could have used more knowledge, but I also had to be aware that it was out there and that I should have explored that avenue. And so I could go back. It doesn't mean I would stop doing the restaurant, because it was wonderful, it was great, and we still have people now who talk to us about it. And my response is, you know, they'll say things like, we miss your restaurant. I'm like, well, you should have ate there more. I don't say that. I want to say that. But, you know, that's an example of a lesson learned because of not taking advantage of someone else's special knowledge. So, and it's a major one, even, you know, 10 years later.
Well, Norm, I just couldn't resist. Norm just shared a story, personal story that reminded me of the 6 feet from goal story in the book. And mm-hmm. for those who may recall, you know, it's the man that just kind of, an expert to
yep.
study the vein of gold, he would have known not to stop there, but to just move over 6 feet in the right direction. And the same is true in all of our lives. And I really appreciate you sharing that story. I'm still back on don't be a renter in your life, be an owner. And as an owner, we have to focus on buying the expertise that we need. That's another chapter, but we can buy the expertise that we need
yeah.
when mm-hmm. you're talking about an area. And even if we do know the area, there's a different perspective where we talk about in the mastermind chapter, where you align yourself with like-minded and like-spirited people. And oftentimes some of those people will specialize in an area you don't. And
right.
so I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Norm Hall. He is a professional, certified professional speaker.
actually, he is one of 180-something certified speaking professionals from the National Speakers Association. And as a professional speaker and facilitator, Norm utilizes his services during high-stakes meetings, national and international conferences, as well as programs that benefit from people who benefit from his engagement. Now, since 1980, you heard him talk about his restaurant for one, but he's also trained thousands of youth leaders and adult professionals on how to enhance their effectiveness with improved leadership skills. And you can just hear from his experience and his vast knowledge that he is still learning about specialized knowledge. But right now we're going to go to a commercial break, and then we're going to come back and continue to dialogue. But I want to also ask all of our listeners, if you would like to participate in this conversation, please press 1 on your dial, and we will invite you in to dialogue with us. But right now we're going to go to a commercial break.
You are listening to the Blog Talk Radio program of the International Mastermind Association. We are here every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. You can listen to this and the other shows anytime on the web by visiting blogtalkradio.com/masterminders, or join us live during the show by calling 661-554-9219. The call-in number again, 661-554-9219. If you wish to join the conversation during the live show, just press 1 on your telephone keypad. You can also join us in the chat room or log on through your Facebook account.
Welcome back. And we have some additional conversation that we'd like to have with Mr. Hull. And I think Pagin would like to ask some additional questions.
Norman,
yes.
what do you consider as your specialized knowledge, and how did you figure that out?
Well, in my early years, I used to speak to young people, and one of the things I did was I would talk about leadership, but more importantly, I would engage them. I would do interaction with them so that I didn't bore them and that they didn't sit there and think I was a teacher or taught like the teachers in their classroom that they maybe did not enjoy as much as they should. And so for me, over the last 39 years, my specialized knowledge, in my mind, I thought was leadership, teaching, and creating the environment where people could receive my information and use it for the first 30-something years, and then I got bored with it. And so the last 5 or 6 years, I stopped talking to young people except for some special events and wanted to figure out what was my other specialized knowledge. Because one of the things I want to encourage everyone is to realize, you know, you can have specialized knowledge in more than one area. And what may happen is you get bored with this great talent you have because you know there's more in you. And so I hit that place where I wanted to search and see if there was something else I was supposed to be doing and pulling out of myself. In the last couple of years, what I realized after going to different events was that I have a great talent of creating an environment for my audience. And that usually involves taking simple, silly interaction concepts and applying them in a more adult manner. And so the last couple of years, my specialized knowledge has been teaching event organizers, event planners, and professional speakers how to interact with their audience in a manner that allows their information to be received. So I'll give you an example that's pretty generic and I think most of us will understand. If you attend a conference, it's not unusual for within the first 5 minutes of the speaker coming on for them to say, let's stand up and give each other a back rub, and people will laugh and go with it because you know, most of the people are followers and they're following the lead of the presenter. Well, the challenge with that is there's a presumption of intimacy that the speaker has with their audience. but there are people in the audience who are introverts who don't like to be touched. They find it an invasion of their personal space. And I'm not saying back rubs are bad. What I'm saying is back rubs are better when they're in the appropriate flow of your event. And what I've realized over the years is that because I pay attention to the audience, I know when to insert things. I know when they need to hear about this concept. I know when the activity that I want to do is going to be its most effective. And so my specialized knowledge has been creating this interaction process and audience so that you can get the most out of it. And it seemed to be something I took for granted because I started off discovering it when I was younger and never really considered it a big deal. Well, it's valuable to event organizers who want their delegates to walk away going, I like that, versus, oh my God, that was so touchy-feely, cringeworthy, that was so just goofy. And being able to position interaction in an audience these days, where we're all sensitive about our space, is something that event planners appreciate. And 25 years ago, they didn't. They thought it was hokey. Well, now, because of everyone wanting to be aware of your personal space, it's something that they appreciate in speakers because it means you're paying attention to the audience and not just focusing on the speaker. So that's the specialized knowledge I have right now.
Can I just piggyback and ask you deeper about that? So
sure.
I understand that you were hearing about it from the event planners, but because you were in the youth environment and they have no filter, did that help you figure it out because they had no filter. They could boo or hiss if things weren't working.
Well, they wouldn't boo
the
or
way
hiss.
You
they just
wanted
wouldn't
to
do
it.
So, yeah, they wouldn't boo or hiss. They wouldn't do it. And young people have no problem letting you know when you're not connecting with them. And so what it meant for me was, that doesn't work with them, or it doesn't work in this setting. And it was probably the best testing ground for this particular specialized knowledge because, as you mentioned, they have no filter. They're polite, but even in their politeness, you can pick up a lesson. But as I mentioned earlier, when I go anywhere, I pay attention. So I knew what would work with them, what wouldn't work with them. And the funny thing is when I transferred over to adults, it was pretty much the same thing. Adults were a little bit more reluctant to express their disfavor. You know, they'll rip you on the evaluation. Oh my God, he made us rub each other's back. That is so unprofessional. That is so. You wouldn't see it in the moment. You would see it later when you would discuss the evaluation or read about it and go, oh, this did not go over well. And so that was a great proving ground for me was young people who taught me baptism by fire, but it was an enjoyable burning at times. So that's where
I'm laughing.
Got a lot of knowledge. Yeah, as you know, young people, they've got no problem letting you know what they think and what they enjoy and don't enjoy.
You do realize that now they're at your the grown-ups that you're teaching.
Oh, I do. And in fact, I can't tell you how many times I have been brought into a company, and I always, because I don't do any advertising, it's pretty much word of mouth. My website is pretty non-existent. My work comes from referrals, and the great thing is to see the specialized knowledge that was implemented and applied to young people is strong enough to carry over to them when they become decision makers. I have been brought into companies like Pepsi and Taco Bell and a bunch of others because the person bringing me in was in my audience 20 years ago, which, you know, on one hand is kind of cool, but on the other hand, it tells you how old I am.
I'm thrilled with hearing this conversation, quite frankly, because it leads to a question that I had when you're talking about young people and adults. There is one person that comes to mind that had a disability, and it was not an obvious disability. It was just difficulty picking up things as a child that turned that into a great profession and did extremely well in the architectural area. So by combining what you see in young people and what the results are possibly in adults, What are some of your ahas in dealing with both of those environments or the continuum of that specialized knowledge?
Well, that when, and today's a great opportunity, a great example where specialized knowledge is being recognized in a way that is non-traditional. Not every young person has to go to college to be successful. There are so many creative young people who are smarter than their classrooms, smarter than their teachers. And the hope is that they've got a teacher who recognizes this young person's specialized knowledge and encourages them and nurtures them instead of saying, oh, you're not staying within the lines, the box of the way we educate. And so when that happens, I think you see them have a tougher road, and later on in their professional life and their adult professional life, if you sit and interview and talk and spend time, you will find that they have either been nurtured by a teacher who recognized their talent, or they have found a way to overcome the teacher who didn't. And so in today's marketplace, there are lots of people who have said, I'm going to choose my own path because I know I'm more than what other people or how they view me. And in the corporate world today, you know, that's been the traditional path we've taught young people to follow, but more and more discovering with the new technologies, the new ways we can make money, the me-preneurship with Uber and Airbnb and just different opportunities to find your place. A lot of them are saying, I will not let you judge me and assess me on what you think makes a good person, a good student, an educated person. And so I think the correlation between new businesses that seem to be so weird, so different than those of us who are older have ever experienced is an example of that line between a young person and an adult finding a connection that means they can take their talents and make a living from it. And the last thing I would share with you on that is, you know, what defines success today is not what defined it years ago. There are people who don't need a lot of money. There are people who can be personally fulfilled just knowing they can be in charge of their own destiny and tapping into their passion. Now, granted, the hope is that they're smart enough to realize when they're 50 and 60 that they need to have a financial package, a foundation that will sustain them in their later years and not get caught up in just finding their knowledge and using it, but not planning to be financially well off. And I think that's probably a shortcoming or an area where they need to be educated and, you know, that struggle will continue forever, but I think I see that correlation between young people and new and people in the professional world today doing what they want to do. Hope that answers your question.
It does, but it also creates another aha moment for me. I was just thinking that when, you know, there's a belief that geniuses are really crazy. And that they specialize in one particular thing or one area to the detriment of other areas. But
true.
To me, that is the wonder of this chapter. If we can just recognize that someone is specializing in something and help them compensate for the things that they lack, then to me, it seems like it would be a better world. But, you know, that's just how I view the world.
Well, think about this. Because that's a great point. Let's look at professional athletes. Because on one hand, they get great when they make it to the professional level. They get paid millions of dollars, and their specialized knowledge is how they play the game. But the way we perceive them is that, and this is a generalization, is that we don't expect them to be smart. We expect them to use their body, their physical gifts to go out. And so when we find that they've lost their money, or act inappropriately, we say it's because they're an athlete. And we say to them, they got to be knuckleheads, when in reality, they just took their specialized knowledge, used in one area, made money, but they were short in the other areas. It's not acceptable in that arena. there are people who are geniuses, but they're not great people persons, but we will make allowances for them because of where their specialized knowledge falls. And so this is a bigger discussion, I think, because as much as I appreciate geniuses and social media gurus, I'm sure there are areas where they fall short, but we just don't see them. And when we do see them, it turns into a negative thing. And so on one hand, we want to recognize people with specialized knowledge. On the other hand, I've seen society really willing and quick to jump on where they fall short. And that happens because they are more visible. So it's interesting what areas we're willing to accept as someone having special knowledge, but also being willing to allow them to be short or have shortcomings in the other areas of their life. And so, you know, that's a deeper conversation that most people never get to or want to have. But
I was just going to say, speaking of conversation, I the other co-hosts, I was going to invite them to ask their final questions and allow you to wrap it up and get your day started. Wyman, would you begin final questions that you would like to ask?
Sure. And Norm, last year I had an opportunity to meet in South Florida, Boca Raton, for the International Mastermind Association's annual accountability meeting. And to put that in a nutshell, it's always the first week of the new year. And to use an analogy that Ann gave me, if you, for example, would have known in January that you would be sitting before a council the following January, and you had to give an accountability for what you did with the previous 12 months, and your acceptable answer or not acceptable would determine whether you get another 12 months, right? You would handle those 12 months proceeding with a little bit more focus because you know accountability is built into it. It's a wonderful conference. I'd advise and recommend it to anyone. But my question here, with regards to specialization, have you found it beneficial? I know you're currently a member of a mastermind group, but to surround yourself, immerse yourself in a culture around people of like mindset. Can you share or give us some insights on how important it is to swim in a pond with people who have like mind, who also give a great deal of credence and importance to specialization? How has that impacted your life?
Well, I think one of the concepts in the book is the mastermind, but it says be, you know, in the company of people with like minds. And that doesn't mean they have to agree with everything that you say, but it means they support you increasing your wealth of specialized knowledge. They see the positive things in the world. They know that to get from A to Z takes steps. And so when you fall down, they're the ones who help pick you up. They see that you can have the life you want if you're willing to do the work, and they're willing to help you. And so I can't tell you how many times I have said I don't want to go to this event because I know the people there are not in that circle of friends for me. They're not in that mindset. And as much as I like people, I know I don't want to waste my time and energy on a discussion that is superficial, that is trivial, that shows the worst side of us as people, as humans. And so I tend to only associate with people, one, I like, two, that I enjoy their company and they are going to challenge me as well as support me. And that's difficult because it means you have to invest time into getting to know who they are before you can make that decision. And so I know that when I do find that group of people where I enjoy their company because they're focused on getting better, I will do almost anything to make sure I stay in contact with them. And so the value of being at a gathering like you mentioned in January is priceless, because you're walking into an event where other people think like you, not necessarily about on every subject, but they see the general picture of here's how we get better. Here's how we are successful. Here's how I show my talent, develop it. Here's how I, and so I think for me, you can't put a price on it, but I know I will gravitate and hang out and support those people in my circle friends who are like that. And when they are not, then I reduce the amount of interaction and contact I have with them. And so that may position me as someone being aloof. I've been accused sometimes, and really what it is I don't have time for your silliness. And so I know I'm okay with who I am. I can live with that response. And when we get to the place where, as I mentioned earlier, you are the owner of your time. You are the owner of where you spend your energies. You are the owner. You can't complain about where you go when you're the one driving the car. And so that's what I would share with you, those of you who are listening. You get to decide who you're hanging out with. And if they're not helping you, then they're probably pulling you in a different direction.
Excellent. Yeah, Thank you, Norm.
Yeah, Norm, I would like to also suggest, too, that the experience we had last week in Atlanta for the NSA video intensive reminded me of what you're sharing and going to Wyman's question, because that, in essence, was a large mastermind group of like-minded, like-spirited individuals who had come together for the purpose of learning how to use video. But interestingly, NSA in and of itself, because of the type of association that it is, in my opinion, a great example of a large mastermind group of entrepreneurs who are experts and professionals in their craft going in the same direction. So thank you so much for that. Right now we're going to go to Begin, and she's going to share her question. I also want to remind any of our callers, if you'd like to participate, because we're getting ready to wrap up the show, and this normally happens right at the moment we're saying, okay, that's it, the show is over, then the hands go up, and many people have joined in, they're listening in, and we want to thank you for doing that, but we just want to make sure we bring you on if you do have a question or if you'd like to participate in the program. Bettine?
Norman, as you were talking and we were talking about masterminds, the question for me was from that specialized chapter that Rockefeller, when he was talking on the judge, and he talked about he could press a button to find people that had the knowledge. So his business, he considered his staff as a mastermind, which, by the way, my hand is going, wow. In your business, who do you have that supports your business and that you consider part of your mastermind? Like, you don't have to tell the names of the people, but what kind of people do you bring into your business to support you so you could do what you need to do?
Well, I would tell you the people who are connected to my business, they're connected because they have specialized knowledge. That's the funny thing, is that everyone who I spend time and energy with, they have some type of specialized knowledge, and I use that knowledge, and I also make sure they understand that's why there's the connection between us. And when, in fact, I've had a gentleman who's been with me since I started at least my leadership program, which is in its 28th year, and we've had some areas where he wanted more compensation. And I told him, look, when you can bring me something new that I can't do myself, then that's what will happen. If you're offering me something I can get anywhere, then I can't pay you for a specialized knowledge that doesn't show up in your behavior and what you share. You can't repeat what I'm teaching you. And so when I'm looking around, everybody who does my website, his name's John, he has specialized knowledge. The person who used to do my travel, she had specialized knowledge. It's one of those things where unconsciously I know that I don't know this. I don't want to spend time and energy on this. And so that is what brings them into my orbit. The person who's my assistant director for one of my programs, their special knowledge is logistical. As for my circle of friends, it's more about their mindset. But in my business, I only incorporate those who have more knowledge, talent than I do in an area that I don't. And so when we're looking at who's doing our T-shirts or who's doing our embroidery for our specialized things for clients, that's not something I do. So I would tell anyone who's running their business, it's nice to hire people, but I want to hire for their talents and that they bring to and with them and to our group. And so I would tell you that anyone I can, and my staff isn't really large. They're, you know, I use them for different events, but everyone who does become part of our programs and what we do, they bring something to the table and they know what they bring. And so it makes it easier for me to hold them accountable. And they're not wondering, what am I supposed to do? It's like, no, you have been invited to be part of this program because of this. So I expect you to do this. Which makes it easier for them because they know when they're doing a great job. They know when they're using their talents. And when I go to ask them to do something that's outside their specialized knowledge, they have the opportunity to say, I don't know how to do that. So I can either say, oh, you're right, or teach them or find somebody who's the appropriate person. So it makes it easier for them to also be successful, because ultimately I want myself to be successful, but I also want the people around me to be successful and to feel like I'm doing what I can to help them, because we all then benefit, which means our clients are happy.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you. All right. We have one caller before we wrap up. Last four digits of your number is 5345. You're on the air. Your question or comment, please.
Good morning. My name is Katina McClinton. I'm a Fresh Start Development owner for 14 years, general contractor. But my question to Mr. Hole is, he made a comment about business versus friends. And I want to ask a question about the friends part of as far as your friends, you having friends and they're not in the business that you are in, or they don't have a business, but they're your friends. How do you differentiate them still being a friend and not they're not going to where you are going? Do you leave them behind? I guess the question is, how do you keep them as a friend going forward if they're not going where you're going?
Sure. It's a great question. When I spend time with them, it is something significant that we're doing. So it means I don't have to see them every day or every week. But what it does mean is when I spend time with them, it is quality time. I've got four friends from high school and I had my 40th reunion 2 years ago, so it tells you how old I am. I am going to see them next week at a Dodger baseball game. I see them once a year, but I keep in contact with them through social media and things like that. But our friendship is strong now as it was then. My other friends, I see them at business events. And so I make sure that in the opportunity we have together, it isn't about all business. It's about who they are and where they are in their personal life. Business is a byproduct. It's what we may get to later on. And we spend time making sure our time together is about personal connection, and the business is secondary. Because they're not directly related to my business, but we indirectly have some connections, I make sure it's always about our friendship. And because these people have a similar mindset or attitude, they're fine with it because they realize we don't have to see each other to be friends. And I think when I say, business and friendship, it doesn't mean I don't interact with people. It means that I don't get caught up in the silliness, the drama. I avoid it. And I can stay at the party for an hour, but I don't need to stay for 2 hours or 3 hours. So people, unless they spend time with me, would say, oh, he's an okay guy. They can't give you this long list of everything I do because I haven't provided that opportunity for them. But I also would tell you that you need to have an open mind with people because, you know, sometimes you're 3 feet from the gold of friendship. And you need to be willing to invest some time before you decide that they're not the people you want in your sphere of friendship. And that's where I think a lot of people misinterpret what I'm saying. I don't need you to be superficial. I need you to do a great job of vetting who you want to be in your circle of friends. And granted, there are some people I know others would look and go, why are you his friend? Well, because when I was down and out, he did something that helped lift me up. And maybe he's not in the same place as I am at this moment. But when I was where he was the one who helped, or she was. Or so I think we all decide what determines what our friendship levels are and how much energy and time we spend with them. I will say this, and I want to make sure it didn't come across. I love my friends. I will do anything for my friends. And we have, probably to our detriment, but ultimately when I'm on my deathbed, it is not going to be something, or you won't hear me saying, oh, I wish I did more business. It'll be, I'm so blessed with the people who have been my friends because they see me through thick and thin. They put up with me when I'm a knucklehead. They are the ones who could see my genius when I couldn't. And business is wonderful, but friends will always be the top of my list.
Yeah,
great question.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you
for your answer.
Asking. Thank you. You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both. There's something I read called, the gut. The gut. Check your gut. And your gut feeling, going to Norm's point, will also help support you in that. I want to just let everybody know who may have chimed in a little late that you have been listening to our special guest, Norm Hall. And Norm is a professional speaker, but he's also the principal and owner of Norm Hall & Associates, which is a leadership consulting company based in Southern California. And Norm is a very experienced person in this area when you're talking about entrepreneurship, and he's an expert, as he shared, about the number of different businesses that he has owned. Norm, you have been a joy to listen to, and I've sat here and I've typed comments while you were talking, so they're a part of this show. And I just want to just let everybody know that we are so appreciative of having you come on now. If you have some closing comments, we're going to prepare to close the show. I would like for you to share also about any project or program that you have coming up that you'd like for us to participate. And also, if you can share any books that you've written. I see some here I'm looking at, but just would like to give you the last words before we close the show and allow you to share any comments, ahas, or some information on what you've written.
Sure, and thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it, but more importantly, I appreciate the book, and the book provides an opportunity to meet other people with like minds who see that life can be better using a process. And so I would encourage all of us to keep masterminding and connecting with each other. A book I would recommend, and it's old, but sometimes that makes it good, especially in a world where we're so tech-driven, data-driven. It's called Selling the Invisible by Henry Beckwith. And it's probably 15 years old, but it talks about the importance of understanding that we're in a service industry. Most of the stuff that I do is about personal development, and that's really hard to showcase because it's not brick and mortar like a restaurant or a health food store or an animal hospital. You can touch and see those. It's about being in a room, sharing my knowledge with other people, and so that's a service industry. So I would encourage those of you who are in that type of industry to grab that book, Selling the Invisible, because it talks about selling what we can't really show to other people. About an upcoming adventure I have, it's called My Audience Interaction Mastery, and it's for professional speakers and presenters and people who work with an audience. So if you're a financial planner, your audience is the people who have invited you into their home. And so at that particular event, what I'm showing people and teaching them is how you can include interaction in anything you're teaching so that people feel like they're not sitting in a theater listening and watching, but they're part of the process of learning, and the experience is something that nurtures their soul and nurtures what they want to achieve when they're working with other people. You know, we have all probably been in that audience where a speaker just kills it, and he or she gets that response because we were part. It wasn't sit and watch. It was somehow he or she engaged us. And so this mastery event is about how do you make that happen on purpose, with intention. And so if you're interested, there's a website, and it's audienceinteractionmastery.com. And it's just for, it's an intimate group of people who just want to be the best presenter they can be when it comes to audiences. And it's one of those, it's an example of me taking my specialized knowledge and providing it for a group that appreciates specialized knowledge. So if you're interested in that, you can check out that website. But I would just tell you, one of the best things I got out of reading this book is that even at this age, I can learn. But there are so many things that are out there that can help us have the life we want if we use the steps. And it's a cost of a book. And, you know, the sad thing is there'll be people who will not invest in the cost of a book to get a better life. They will go spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars chasing something that they hope someone else will provide when they can read this book and do it themselves. And so as a participant of this particular group and that mastermind with the Black NSA, I know I'm better than I was a year ago because of the knowledge I've learned. And I would encourage all of us to figure out what our specialized knowledge is and not just realize it's one, but there's probably different areas where we have specialized knowledge and it's valuable, and to make the most of this opportunity. And so, you know, thank you, Anne, for inviting me and allowing me to be a part of this. I've enjoyed as much answering because it helps me remind myself what I've learned. And that's one way we can avoid forgetting these lessons. So thank you.
Norm, you have said it all, and you said it best. We're going to go ahead and get that information about your mastery program, and we will make it a part of the show. So for those who may be listening can participate, is there a date or is it online?
It's online.
Okay.
Oh, perfect. No. You mean it's an actual event. You will come to a place. It's a physical event because you can teach this online after you've been to the event. But it's June 20th through the 22nd, and it'll be held, it's in San Diego. But and it's limited.
Okay, we'll add the details and the link.
Yeah,
right, okay, we'll add the details and the link to this show. So for those who are listening and would like to participate, they can click the link and connect with you, because that is our way of saying thank you for blessing us today, because you have been a gem and your wisdom has just, I know for myself, and I'll speak for myself, it has really blessed me, and I've had a lot of aha's myself sitting here taking notes. And so with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. We're going to encourage everybody to join us next Saturday at 8 a.m. and every Saturday we will be right here sharing the principles of success from the book Think and Grow Rich. See you next week.
Thank you.
For more information about the International Mastermind Association, visit internationalmasterminders.com or on Facebook, visit the group International Mastermind Association. The name of the book is Think and Grow Rich, the original version restored and revised by Napoleon Hill. ISBN 1-593-30-2002. That ISBN number again, 1-593-30-2002.